CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my friend and colleague Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. China policy at the United States State Department. We welcome Stephen Yates, chair of the America First Policy Institute's China Policy Initiative, to help us on recent headlines from Reuters and other remarks from the State Department about China and the U.S. Reuters, the U.S. State Department's top China policy official, Rick Waters, set to step down at a time of fraught relations between Washington and Beijing. That's Reuters' word, fraught. I like the word. Steve, a very good evening to you. Wendy Sherman, the Deputy Secretary of State, leaving momentarily from the State Department, something to do with China, and now Rick Waters stepping down from his role as Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for China and Taiwan. Is this routine foot traffic at state, or is something up? Good evening to you, Steve.
Oh, good evening, John. Well, under normal circumstances, and one can always argue what the definition of normal is these days, it would be pretty typical at year three of an administration for political appointees to begin considering whether they are moving up or out of an administration. And so to see the number two official as Deputy Secretary Sherman is considering an exit is kind of typical in the political life cycle of top appointees. Is there a policy or political divide between the White House and state? That's happened in past administrations. There were clear rivalries in the Bush administration and others. In this case, with the lower level change of a deputy assistant secretary changing places, that I would assume has more to do with, yes, the relations between U.S. and China are fraught. I bet it's quite difficult. You know, there's not very many meetings, and so there's not very many note-taking opportunities for people at the State Department to get into the full swing of diplomacy to talk past problems.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Steve, in the Biden administration, I think there appears to be a competition among the various departments to engage China. So you have, for instance, Commerce Department, Secretary Raimondo met the Minister of Commerce a couple days ago. The Defense Department wants to talk to the Chinese Defense Minister, although the Chinese Defense Minister is under sanctions. And the State Department has tried to re-engage after the balloon incident. What is the policy of the Biden administration right now with regard to China, at least with regard to talking to China?
Well, it's a fair question. And really, through their entire tenure, I think they've struggled to come up with some kind of a narrative that explains the strategic purpose and outcome that under a reasonable period of time, they might achieve a difference in U.S.-China relations. Lately, it sounds like the imperative comes from the president himself. It's this alleged thaw. You expect that as Department of State to seek engagement. In some ways, it's written into the DNA of that part of the executive branch. You don't expect to see it quite as enthusiastically out of the Defense Department. They have their reasons over time for giving it a try. And then the Commerce Department, in many ways, has always been about being a voice of the business community. Of course, that's not the sum total of the American economy. So there's tension with those who are being taken advantage of in U.S.-China economic relations. But there's the full swing of trying to realize this thaw, I think, is the only organizing premise right now. Unfortunate for them, the Chinese government is not in receive mode when it comes to participating in this thaw.
The confrontation between Beijing and Washington, if that's the way to describe it, I have one small detail from this that I follow these last days. The company NVIDIA, which makes the highest-end chips, is led by a man of charismatic leadership, Jensen Huang. And recently he said things that are consistent but a little mysterious. One, he said the CHIPS Act of the United States is not a good direction because it will oblige China to develop its in-house chips development and separate itself from the global economy, especially his company, NVIDIA, which has the highest-end chips and is now proscribed, I believe, in some fashion from selling to a big portion of his customer base. And then another announcement came from Jensen Huang. They developed a new machine, a new processing machine that allows AI to accelerate forward in development, a machine that doesn't exist or a tool that doesn't exist anywhere in China nor anywhere else in the world, and he's sure that our high-end AI developers, Google, etc., will be the first customers, not naming China as a customer. So I tell these stories, Steve, because they don't go together. Do we need China, or can we accelerate past China? Is there an AI race like there's a moon race and China's losing? Can you tell?
Well, number one, I think Jensen gave a very compelling commencement address in Taiwan that I think is worthy of everyone skipping to the end and getting a summary. It was very, very moving and motivational on his strategic judgment about China and ties there. I just think it's completely incorrect to assume that China must be kind of included and engaged when it comes to this sensitive technology sphere. In many ways, his own company proves the power of innovation and in some cases resurrection of businesses and technological initiatives because of the free society, free speech, innovative bedrock of American culture and legal system to protect intellectual property. And so in many ways, his own corporate experience, his personal experience is the best rebuttal to the first premise he had about engaging China or keeping China in this supply chain, lest they develop their own. They're not going to be an innovative technological leader at the cutting edge of any of these tech sectors on their own, except those where ethics hold us back and they have no ethics. They can, in fact, move much further ahead on surveillance and control mechanisms.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Just to extend what you were saying, Steve, NVIDIA's two high-end chips, the A100 and the H100, may not be sold to China. And China does not appear to have the ability to come up with something at least as good as those chips. They've got workarounds, but their workarounds are not really working. And so it seemed to me that even if China were to try to develop an alternate chip industry, which it's struggling to do, it's just not going to succeed for the reasons and other reasons that you mentioned.
People don't want to admit it, but there are consequences to the nature of the state and also the nature of society. If you have a society that is afraid to get out of the bounds of a political movement or a political group in charge, it's going to be stifling. When you have a government that is provoking conflict, that makes it so that people are concerned about their executives being detained or their assets being frozen and otherwise crippling their investment engagement in your own country, it's going to have a stifling effect. And so I just think that it's common sense in a way, but it's taken a very, very long time for American leaders, especially in the corporate and investment world, to realize that the nature of the state really does matter. And if Americans work with those of like mind, we actually have a stronger base of innovation and economic growth than any of the dealings with China have delivered over the recent generation.
Steve Yates, Gordon Chang.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.